Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. From the newsroom to the racquetball court, journalist and editor Ron Bender left a legacy that remains for those who know where to look. Kevin Wooster joins us with memories of Bender as they intersect with life in Rapid City today. You can find Kevin Wooster's blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. Hey, Kevin, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, as always, Lori.
How was Thanksgiving? Is that an outdoor day for you? Is that a sit and eat day for you?
It was a sit and not eat day for me because Mary and I had come off about a week of intestinal virus situation. She was actually up and went to her son's house to eat, and I was watching football and just being glad that I felt like eating anything at all. So it is often an outdoor day for me. In fact, one Thanksgiving I took the old Miata convertible I had and drove to La Creek Refuge to hunt pheasants on Thanksgiving with the top down and my dog sitting next to me in the passenger seat of old red convertible. And I can tell you that we captured a lot of looks driving through the reservation. if there were ever any doubts about the stability of some old white men in the world, I think I put them to rest right there, down there. A lot of looks, a lot of horn honks.
A lot of stories to tell later on about that guy that I saw. Yeah.
My guess is I became part of the oral history on that whole road down through Sharp's Corner and Kyle and Allen and Scenic. So,
Kevin Wooster, I think you're a part of the oral history in many places in South Dakota, not just along one road, but that's maybe a conversation for another time.
Probably.
All right. So you're having one of those experiences that so many of us who have loved and had friends and have lost, where you're just walking around and then suddenly you're in a space and you're thinking of someone else. Tell me a little bit about time on the racquetball court, please.
Well, I don't play racquetball. I used to be a pretty serious tennis player. And Mary plays a little bit, or is starting to play a little bit, and our grandson Jackson, who we're trying to get some exercise with on a regular basis, we were down at the Y, and after we'd been on the track and done some things, they went down to hit the racquetball around, and I was standing above the court on the lookout area down where you can watch them play. And it was you watch them play, and I said out loud, "You guys are my two favorite racquetball players." And of course, they said, "We don't even know what we're doing down here." Right. And then I thought of my real previous favorite racquetball player, of course, who was Ron Bender, my colleague and friend at the Rapid City Journal, and a guy that worked at the Journal for almost 40 years. Mm. And nearby where I was standing is a plaque that honored him from back in the 70s when he and another group of sporting types helped develop the racquetball program and courts at the Y here in Rapid City. And then there's also a sign about the racquetball tournament that's was developed in his name and his honor after he died in 2007, November of 2007. So, and there you go. You and I have talked about Stanley Kunitz, the poet, and his feast of losses that we all have to reconcile ourselves with, and more as we age. And so, as you know, I've been having trouble doing some writing. I had an unusual situation for me where I just was struggling to write anything, and I came home and started writing about Bender and about racquetball and about people we care about and lose.
That's a little something about writing, don't you think? It's always there. Because what a beautiful beginning that you sent me to consider, and you're like, "Yeah, you're not done." There's a lot of words in there that you still have mastery of. Do you find that, what is your writing process like a little bit, if we can pivot to that?
Well, sometimes more and more now, it used to be disciplined, and it used to be I have these things to write, and I have to write them. And so the serious joke I used to give to people struggling with writing in the newsroom was, lower your standards, write.
And started.
I was pretty good at doing that. And just get going, write something, and then you can come back and work with it if you'd like to, and usually do. But I'm not as disciplined about it in this semi-retired state that I'm in, and I tend to only want to write when I want to write, and usually I do, but lately I've been having trouble with that.
Yeah.
And And I think what happens is, and it's as you're cruising along in life and something slaps you in the face and says, you have to write about this. And that's kind of what Bender did. And in some ways, you know, because he was a guy who edited a lot of my stuff, and you know, he's a very tender on his obituary pages, I remember many people use the word kind and the kindest man. And I would say he was the kindest editor I've ever worked for in terms of the way he treated people, and also in with Softy, who used to come over to the desk when he was reading some of my columns with tears running down his cheek and say, "You old SOB, you made me cry again." And that was always a very nice thing to make Bender cry.
Right. Kindness and editors, I mean, how high is that bar?
It isn't always the high, because their job is usually not kindness first.
Right.
But it really was with Bender. It was just the naturally who he was, and it was hard for him to get around being that guy.
Yeah. What kind of journalist was he? What was he interested in, and what sort of drove him?
Well, he was interested in the things I think I was interested in and am interested in, and that's us here. And that's why he was here for so long. You know, a Eureka guy and an Augustana graduate and a guy that came out here and stayed out here and loved this place, loved the hills, loved Western South Dakota, loved South Dakota as a whole, but really got to know Western South Dakota and worked as you know, many of these long-timers do, not me because I knew I was bad editor material, but he and was city editor and other jobs and wrote a column about the newsroom, which was really entertaining and really informative about life in the newsroom. If you wanted to figure out more about how a newsroom operates, that Ron Bender column was great.
Wow. And how much has changed now? I mean,
yeah.
He saw it change certainly over the decades that he worked at the Journal, but what is life in a newsroom like now compared to what it was like before? Lots of people are talking about that in a rather nostalgic way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was on social media here and somebody was criticizing the Journal for not covering, and maybe this will be a segue into something else, but not covering some issues around here. And I said, yeah, I understand. At our peak that I remember, we had in the Journal 16 reporters. 3 did features, 13 did news. That's not the sports guys. That's not the copy desk, which we had. That's not the different levels of editors and different staff support people and editorial page editor. And now I said, I think they have 5 or 6 reporters total compared to 16 total. Mm-hmm. And I think one of those may be the editor, Kent Bush, who does a lot of writing too, but it's somewhere in that area. So do you pay more for less now? Sure you do. Yeah, there's no way around it. But you still pay for a professionally produced news product that you can't get anywhere else. You know?
Yeah. Talk about those feature writers, because I think that's something that, you know, you often hear people talking about, you know, who's covering this legislative session, where, you know, how many people are in that press box versus how many are there now, and you know, how many people are covering, doing investigative reporting. But the feature writer, which is an art in and of itself, is something out of fashion now, isn't it?
It is, and it's important. It's something that's lost. My wife, Mary, who's an excellent reporter and journalist and writer, spent most of her life, she had done all kinds of general reporting over East with newspapers and out here with the Journal. Mostly at the Journal, she was a feature writer, and mostly she wrote food and religion. And it's an interesting combination to feed the spirit, feed the body, and she really played off that very well. And you'd be amazed at how many people I run into who go back 20 years, 10 years, you know, whatever, and talk about a food story that she wrote that meant more than just the food, that was done in a special way, or a religion story that changed their view of spirituality.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's lost, because we really don't have that kind of focus. Every paper of size used to have a little feature department. It was smaller than news significantly, but very important to the paper and to its readers. And that's largely been lost.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, transition to people criticizing, you know, you didn't cover this, you should have been here. What's your experience with some of those conversations about, you know, people's insight into what should be covered?
Well, those are hard calls. And first of all, what happens a lot on social media, you'll see, well, you never see the mainstream media covering this. This is something,
right.
And then they'll send me up. And if you could just do a simple Google, I'm not asking you to take a deep dive anything. Before you send one of those things out, just at least Google the issue, because invariably, almost without exception, I'll do a quick Google and give them four or five links of mainstream media stories on that subject.
Right.
And that's on the national level, and it's also down locally. I remember when I was at the Journal, a guy stopped me, or at the Argus in Sioux Falls, a guy stopped me at some public hearing and said, "Why don't you ever cover this? I read you all the time, and you never write about this, and I assume it's because you got an interest here, or you've been bought off, or you've been something." And so I went back to the newsroom and went back over the last year and counted up over 30 stories that I'd done on that subject.
Right.
And I sent him copies of some and lists of dates on the other and said, "I don't think you read me as much as you said you did." And it's not always quite that way, but it's usually that way, you know, and it's frustrating. People want to judge immediately and say we're not covering it. And even worse than that, they want to tell us why we're not covering it, as if we have these deep, you know, conspiratorial reasons for not being on an issue. You know?
Yeah, that's key. I think that there's a payoff to that, to saying, you know, you didn't cover it and here's why. So one of my experiences is just the way people have become about reaching out to tell you that something's happening, in the sense that maybe they'll just fire off a press release to 15 different organizations and they'll say, "Well, yeah, you didn't pick up on it." Well, I get hundreds of those, you know, a week, sometimes in a day.
Yeah. And that goes back to staffing, too. When we don't have feature writers, but we also don't have beat reporters who have beats that you work, and that involves staying in touch with people and reaching out to people. And they can call you specifically. They had options at the Journal when I was there. When you had 16 reporters, there were a lot of people you can call, especially if there were people that had been around for 10 or 15 or 20, or in Bender's case, 38, 39 years.
Yeah.
And that's been lost, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just have to be patient and keep reaching out specifically and making your pitch to individual people. We'll get to it when we can.
Right. And I always say relationships, you know, have a relationship, you know, similar to having a relationship with your representative and peer. You know, how often are you communicating with the person who represents you and peer? Or are you just on Facebook, you know, making comments about, you know, how broken the state legislature is, for example, or how they, with a capital T, will do this or that. Make a phone call. Get to know who those people are, you know, on your school board, on your, this is just basic engagement. Get to know who those journalists are and talk to them.
Yeah. And it used to be people would show up downstairs. People would see you play. People would call you and call around the newsroom until they get you. "I want to talk to Kevin Wooster about this story and why he's not covering this." Now they go on social media and criticize you and accuse you of things that are usually just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, we always used to laugh and say, "Oh, I wish we could get organized enough to have a conspiracy here." Well, we were so busy chasing our tail, like we could plan something like that out.
Right. On the other hand, we all have to be accountable, too. I mean, there are times when I just plain old miss stuff. And then I feel,
people.
I didn't get that done because I didn't prioritize the way I should have. And because we're human beings who occasionally make mistakes, sometimes big ones.
You want to diffuse an angry caller, say, "Absolutely, you're right. I missed that. I'm sorry."
Right.
What? And I'll try to catch it next time. Like, you call me, let me know. Let's work on it.
When you think back to, you know, I want to get back to Ron and Bender and just, you know, some of what he was saying about what was going on in a newsroom, what would he think about the future? I mean, where is the future now? Because we're talking largely about, you know, a newspaper, but clearly I work in a newsroom today, and we have beat reporters, and, you know, we have coverage of the state legislature, and we're doing a lot of powerful journalism here at SDPB, if I may say so humbly.
Sure.
But you know, what is the future of a newsroom? What is a healthy newsroom? How does it function really well?
Well, I think first of all, Ron Bender would be very sad about the state of the newsroom. If you walk in the, you know, half of the Journal building that used to all be news and advertising and layout and copy desk part of it's a beauty shop now. Part of it's rented out to other stuff. And what's left is part of it's vacant. You go up there, at least the way it used to be, I've been up there for a while, and you see all these empty space and darkness. And Bender would be very sad about that. I mean, he'd be happy that it's still operating. I think he'd be sad that there maybe is a disconnection between the management in a lot of the papers these days and the people who buy the product. And that's something that newspapers can work on, I think. I don't know what you do about people that are under 50 that don't believe paying for really professionally produced news is worth it, because there are a lot of those, and about the online stuff. And I don't know what you do about that. I think newspapers are probably going to be online mostly eventually, because distributing that paper product is so amazingly inefficient and expensive. And then how do you maintain in the reading public a desire for news produced by pros and not produced by people just throwing stuff around? And I think you do that by having conversations with them as reporters and semi-retired reporters, and trying to hold the standards that Ron Bender knew and believed in for 40 years.
Right. That's another thing we could talk about for a while, is how often I get, somebody who sends me a copy or a link to a blog and, you know, you should cover it like this. And we say, well, that blog does not meet any kind of journalistic standards, whatsoever. But I do appreciate the insight and the idea and the perspective of political blogs, but they aren't necessarily, depending on who's doing the blogging, any resemblance of journalism.
No, most blogs are just like the guys who 40 years ago used to scream at you in the coffee shop.
Right.
You ought to be doing this, Worcester. Why aren't you doing this? That's kind of what most blogs are. Not all. You get some blogs that really do a lot of reporting and a lot of writing and a lot of work.
Yeah.
I try to do some of that online on public broadcasting when I'm not drifting. But it's a different world. And I get so many times people say, well, it's all over the press. Well, I say, what do you mean the press? And it'll be a blog somewhere.
Right.
And you try to explain, that's not the press. That's not a mainstream media outlet. That's not this. So you spend half your time trying to explain things that you would have thought people would already understand.
And that's why we're still here, still having those conversations. Well, there is plenty at sdpb.org/Worcester for you to dig into in that archive and see some of the great work that Kevin is doing online for South Dakota Public Broadcasting now. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your insight, as always.
As always, my pleasure. Bye.